wheels on the bus go round and round. The people on the bus go up and down. The driver on the bus goes move on back all through the town. Welcome to another perpendicular episode of Nothing Specific with your boy, Trevor David Houchin. Came home today, saw a spider in my room. Now I like spiders, all right? I like spiders. Spiders, they kind of mind their own business, you know? They don't like, it isn't like they're out to get you. In fact, if anything, it seems they want to avoid human contact as much as possible. Unlike roaches, roaches seem vindictive. Yeah, you know, I don't know. Roaches seem, I don't know. What? Roaches just seem rude. Like, they seem rude. They seem, I got nothing against bums. But you know how bums, you know, are you allowed to still call them bums or homeless? I don't know. I'm going to stick with bums. I don't mean to offend any of the bums out there. I don't mean to offend any of the bums in the audience tonight, but you know how bums, you know, they panhandle. They ask you for money, you know, and then if you don't give them money, like they're angry, they're pissy, you know, they might even follow you. And it kind of seems like they feel entitled to your money. Like they not only did you work for your money, but it seems like they think they worked for your money also, you know? That's how I feel about roaches. Like, they're entitled to be in your house. You know, the food that you went and bought, like, they feel like they're entitled to your food, right? Or whatever it is that they want. You know, roaches, they seem like diabolical little insect horror movie clowns. That's what I think of roaches, who are on top of which dirty, you know? But spiders aren't like that. First of all, spiders, there's nothing dirty. I don't know. You know, I don't know. Maybe there is something dirty about spiders that I just don't know. But I don't get this ick. Like, you know, gross shiver down my spine when I see a spider. You know? You see a spider in your house and you almost feel like two things. You feel one of two things. You feel like either A, it's your roommate. This spider, it's your roommate. You don't feel like with a roach, there's an immediate sensation of, yo, what are you doing in my house? Get out of my house. Get out of my house. Like, you don't belong here. Nobody extended an invitation for you to be here. You're not welcome here. In fact, you're so in fact, you're so not welcome. I might kill. Matter of fact, I'm going to kill you. I'm going to end your life, Mr. Roach. Okay? Your roach family. You are not going home to your roach family tonight. Your roach kids are gonna. I'm gonna leave your roach kids fatherless. Of course, I you know, me personally, I'm not allowed to kill anything anymore due to me being a practicing Buddhist. And, you know, I've accepted the five precepts. One of the five precepts is you're not allowed to kill anything. But if there's anything, if there are two things, if there are two things that seem to deserve death, it's roaches and flies. You can't let a roach or a fly live. You can't. It's almost like something goes off in your body, like, I must kill you now when you see a roach or a fly. Spiders, it's not that way. Spiders, you don't get that reaction with spiders. Like I said, there's two things you see a spider in your house. Two things. It's one of two things. Either one, this spider lives with you. Okay? This spider lives with you. You see a spider, this spider lives with you. Okay? Somewhere in your house, this guy lives in your house with you. Spiders. Or two, he's in your house accidentally and he can't wait to get out. There's nothing nefarious about spiders. Like, you just don't get the roach effect. What is the roach effect, Trevor? The roach effect is you see a roach and immediately it's on. It's on. You see a roach. It's on. It's you versus him. You know that this guy's out to get you. You know this guy's out to get you. It's a roach, for Christ's sake. It's a roach. Listen to that word. Listen to the name, roach. It's a roach. Roach is synonymous with enemy. Okay? Roach is synonymous with enemy. You see a roach, it's immediately your enemy. There's nothing else. There's no consideration for its family. There's no consideration for how it got there. It might be hungry. You know, nothing. It must die. It's your enemy. Spiders, no. 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 No, 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 no. Spiders is different. You see a spider in your house, and there's a certain mystery, dare I say, compassion for this creature. Again, you see a roach, your first thought is, what the? How the? What the? You see a spider, it isn't like that. You see a spider, it's more a sense of, well, how did this, how, where? How did, where, you know what I mean? Compassion. There's some compassion you feel when you see a spider. Except when it's a big spider. When it's a big spider, it's abject fear. Fear. Suddenly you've been thrust into a horror movie or a science fiction movie. If you see a big spider, you may as well come home and see a dinosaur in your house. You may as well walk into your house and see a Tyrannosaurus Rex or like a Stegosaurus or something. Pterodactyl. Big spider. The spider I saw a spider in my room when I came home today. And it's the very first. Been living in this apartment for 7.5 months. Not true. I've been living in this apartment since November, December, January, February, March, April. 5.5 months. I've been in this apartment 5.5 months. I've been in Japan 7.5 months. It's the very first insect I have seen indoors. Well, it's not an insect, right? Spider. It's an arachnid. It's the very first creature. Let's just say that. It's the very first creature I've seen inside since I've gotten to Japan. Diametric opposite in Atlanta. Diametric opposite in Atlanta. Constant, and you know, Atlanta's roaches, man. God. Ugh. God. My wife would, I'd be out on the road. I'd be out working, doing whatever I'm doing. Outside. My wife would pick up the phone and call me to come home from wherever I was to kill a roach. I'd walk into the apartment and my wife would be in a cold sweat. The worst thing is seeing a roach in your, like in the shower. What are you doing in there? Oh, you've got to die. You're going to die an ugly death too. It's not going to just be a quick smashing. No, it's going to be, you know, oh man. But anyway, came home today, saw a spider, and it was kind of big. About as big as a quarter. Yeah, maybe, you know, maybe bigger. Maybe bigger. Big as a quarter. That's big, man. That's big. That's a good sized spider, man. Good sized spider, man? No. That's a good sized spider. You know what I mean? Big as a quarter? So my first thought is, what should I do? What should I do? Should I, you know, I've only got one cup. You know, I've only got this one. I've only got one cup. I've got no jars. Nothing, you know, only this one cup I could trap it with. But the minute I walked in the room and saw him on the wall, he saw me. You know, the minute, like we had eye contact. And I could see immediately, well, this dude's fast. This is a fast spider. It's got eight legs. I mean, spiders in general are fast. Daddy long legs, not so much. They look like they're all moving in slow motion. Little tiny, tiny, tiny little spiders. Sometimes they're super fast. Like I think wolf spiders. These guys are fast. Anyway, this one that I saw on my wall was fast. Immediately, I could tell immediately. I walk into the room. We give each other a little bit of eye contact, and he's immediately like, he moves really fast. And I'm like, okay, even if I want to try to trap him with my one glass, it's not going to be easy. He's not going to make it easy. And then there are jumping spiders. Now, I am not afraid of spiders. And as a matter of fact, like I said earlier, I feel a certain compassion, almost kinship with spiders. Why? They don't, like I said, they don't want to bother anybody. You know, they want to be left alone. You know, they're generally peaceful. They're clean. You know, they're independent. They're self-sustaining. They don't need your food. They don't, you know, they don't need anything from you as a human. They don't need anything. You just want to be left alone. You know, a lot of those things I feel the same about myself. So there's a certain kinship. Also, you know, spiders, there's a certain, like I said, fear factor with spiders, especially with women. Women don't like spiders. Spiders are creepy to women. Spiders are creepy to women. It's got something to do with the whole eight legs thing. Spiders are creepy. Roaches are just disgusting. But spiders are creepy. And, you know, I don't know. I could be wrong. I could be right. But I think women think I'm creepy. I really do. I've never been called creepy. But just the fact that I feel a kinship with spiders gives me the impression that, generally speaking, probably women think I'm creepy. I don't know. So Anyway, I was thinking, what should I do? You know, should I trap it with the glass? And that might have taken a long time. Like I said, the spider was quick on his feet. So I decided to make some dinner, make my dinner, eat my dinner, and then, you know, and then think about what, you know, either what to do if, or if there's anything to be done. Ate my dinner. Spider was gone. Ate my dinner, the spider was gone. As far as I'm concerned, out of sight, out of mind. Now, of course, you know, I hope, I'm just hoping the spider doesn't crawl into my futon with me and decide to bite me on my eyelid, something stupid, you know, have eggs in my ear. You know, something just absurd like that. Because that's an issue. That's an issue. That is like, that's spider behavior. You know, that's spider behavior. And I just don't want that. I just don't want that. But at the same time, I'm not allowed to kill it. I'm not allowed to kill the spider. I can't kill the spider. I've literally taken a sworn oath to not kill anything. Now, you know, listen, if I had come home and there was a roach, cockroach or something in my apartment, what a dilemma. I'm serious. I'm serious. I've actually had that dilemma. My wife and I, when we lived in Atlanta, we didn't have fights about it, but it was really and truly quite a conflict between the two of us as to what I should do. She, you know, her, there's no, my Buddhism goes out the window. There's a roach in the house. She, you know, she doesn't care about the five precepts. She wants this thing dead, and I've got to do the killing. And it truly was, several times, quite a conflict. But at the end of the day, it's either my wife or the roach, right? At the end of the day. At the end of the day, it's either my wife or the roach. I gave my wife a ring. I gave her a ring. Roach has no ring. Roach has to die. It's a big deal, though. It's really a big deal. I felt bad. Felt bad. I think that's just useless when people say, I felt bad, or I feel bad. Like, so what? Like, what? And I feel bad. I feel bad. Something happened to somebody and I feel bad. Like, come on, man. Come on. What's the point? So two people feel bad. You and this other person. I feel bad. Pointless. Pointless. I feel bad. I don't say that. I never say that. I don't feel bad. I don't feel bad. The thing to do in order to not feel bad is to not do the thing that's going to make you feel bad. That's the solution to that issue. Don't do the thing that's going to make you feel bad, because once you've done the thing, your feeling bad is pointless. It's you. Now you're making two people feel bad. You've already made the other person feel bad, and now you're also making yourself feel bad. Pointless, 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 masochistic, pointless. But when I killed the roach, I felt bad. I felt bad. You know, I felt bad. Roach was dead. My wife could breathe. But I felt bad. But the thing is, you know, yeah, feeling bad is weird. When you, like I said, when you feel bad, I feel bad because somebody else got hurt, or I feel bad about something I said, or I feel bad about something I did, or. It's so ill-defined. It's so ill-defined. I feel bad. Wait, in a way, what does that mean? I feel bad. I don't like feeling bad. Who does, right? Who does? But, I mean, you know, like turning your hatred or your dislike or your displeasure or dissatisfaction or whatever, turning that inwards on yourself, so weird. But like so many people, I'd say the majority, so many people live their lives exactly like that, all day, every day, feeling bad about themselves. Feeling bad, you know, like your partner doesn't love you as much as you'd like them to love you, so you feel bad. And, you know, this is a predicament that I'm extremely familiar with. You know, feeling, again, you know, the word bad is completely, it's so vague. It's just too vague to feel bad. But feeling bad because, you know, my partner doesn't love me the way I'd like her to love me, you know, or doesn't love me as much as I'd like her to love me. I'm tired of that, man. I'm trying to open these dark chocolates. Hold on. I have trouble. Let me be honest with you about something. I have trouble opening packaging. I'm not kidding. And it isn't like I'm weak. I'm not weak. But packaging, I've got real issues with packaging, man. Plastic things, tea bags, cardboard containers. Jeez, tough, man. It's tough. You would think. Anyway, I've just had it up to here with like feeling bad because my partner doesn't love me the way I'd like her to love me. What way is that, Trev? Well, let's be specific. That's. Okay, I'll be specific. I'd like a little bit more, what's the word? I don't know, curiosity on her part as to how my life is going. Oh my God, this is dark chocolate. Oh my God, it's so addictive. Addictive? Addicting? Dark chocolate versus milk chocolate. What? Are you kidding? No comparison. No comparison. Dark chocolate versus milk chocolate. Dark chocolate versus milk chocolate is like, what? Like pancakes versus white bread. Yeah? Oh my God. How did they discover chocolate? Like, how? How did they? Who? How? How did they, like, how did they make the first chocolate bar? Like, what? You know, chocolate comes from beans? Is that right? Or is it leaves? Chocolate leaves? No, that doesn't. Cacao plant, right? The cacao? The cacao plant? The cacao plant? Is that what it's called? Is it the beans or is it the leaves? Chocolate leaves doesn't sound right. Chocolate beans sounds more right. Or are they chocolate pods? What is it, man? Is it chocolate beans, peas, leaves, pods? What is it? Slivers? Where does chocolate come from? Oh my God, it's so delicious. Anyway. What I'd like is, I'd like for her to be more curious about my stuff. Right, but there's a fine line. There's a fine line. There's also, you got completely incurious. And, you know, is the word ambivalent? No, it's not ambivalent. You got incurious and completely uninterested at one end of the spectrum. Then at the other end of the spectrum, you have like totally obsessed, compulsive, just, you know, mad nosy. You know, like overly curious. And I don't want that either. But my wife is definitely closer to the end of the spectrum that one could qualify as being, you know, incurious. I don't give a F. I don't give an F. But I know my wife gives an F. I know she gives an F. But I wish I wish she gave a little bit more of an F. That's it. But you know, the truth of the matter is, this is, you know, it's like my complaints are the opposite end of the spectrum of what most men complain about. Like, my wife gives me so much space. She really does. And I was out with a friend of mine today, and this friend was saying to me, you know, Trevor, your wife is giving you the opportunity to become whole. I mean, that was one of the most poignant, salient, insightful, you know, higher-minded things I've heard for a long time. Trevor, your wife is giving you room for you to be whole. I mean, so true, man. And I, you know, I try. It's wild. I try to be thankful to my wife, you know, silently on my own for that, because it's just true. There's no ifs, ands, or buts about it. But the thing is, I know my wife isn't at her family's house thinking, yeah, I'm giving Trevor room to be whole. I know that's not what she's doing. She's not doing that. If she were doing that, well, what would it mean? So what? You know, what would you, so what? If I were to somehow find out that my wife was conscious of the fact that her lack of presence, really, in my life was a conscious decision on her part to help me to grow as an individual, what would that mean to me? You know, would I be thankful for that? You know, would I be like, oh, whoa, thank you, baby, thank you. Thank you for not being around so I can be alone to grow into wholeness. Thank you, that's so kind of you. No, man. Get out of here, man. No. Just come. Just get over here and make some breakfast. God. But that's the truth. You know, it's the truth is, what my friend said today is the truth. Trevor, your wife is giving you space to be whole. To grow into your own being, you know. Without being codependent of her. And without her being codependent of you. And there's this certain, you know, what I'm learning is, I've got, I guess, you know, like this old, I don't know if it's old fashioned, but I've got this sort of old fashioned, traditional, old world, 20th century idea of what a marriage is, quote unquote, supposed to be. that's what I've got. I've got this, you know, I've got this image, you know, of like, even though my parents weren't, didn't have the, you know, ideal relationship, they were together. They slept in the same bed, lived in the same house, you know, came home every day, and we all lived together. You know, they lived together. They were with each other 24 hours a day, up in each other's face 24 hours a day for my entire, you know, until I was 17, 19, even while a lot of the relationship was dysfunctional. But still, that idea of what a relationship is supposed to be is ingrained in my mind. You know, we're supposed to be together all the time. We're supposed to sleep together in the same bed, in the same room every night, you know. Dysfunctional or not, growth be damned. Individual wants and desires be damned. You know, we're a couple, so we're gonna stay together. We're gonna be coupled up. We're gonna be booed up. We're gonna be coupled up. And maybe, you know, maybe that's just, you know, maybe it's just like a chimera. Maybe it's just like a hazy black and white 8mm movie from, you know, some long gone era that doesn't really exist anymore. But I've still, you know, I'm still holding on to this, you know, archaic, obsolete idea of what it's supposed to be. And then that translates, of course, into loneliness. Lonely. And then that loneliness translates into a certain amount of resentment. Well, why isn't she here? She should be here. Why isn't she here? Yo, maybe she doesn't want to be here. Right? Maybe she just doesn't want to be here. And, you know, I pride myself. Pride is a difficult thing. I pride myself on not being the kind of guy to hold on too tightly, to cuff a chick, you know, to cuff her psychologically, physically, emotionally. I don't want to cuff her. I want to give her some growth. You know, I want to give her space. I mean, you know, if she's a potted plant, you know, I want her to be. If she doesn't want to be in the pot anymore, you know, you go replant yourself. Go find a big field. Replant yourself. I'd like to think of myself that way. And the truth is, when I met my wife, that's how I was. That's how I presented myself to her. That's how I presented myself to her. Like, yo, you know, I'm not trying to hold you down. Do what you want. You're grown. We're both grown, right? I can remember these conversations. Yo, we're both grown, right? We didn't meet as children. We met as adults. We met as, you know, fully formed biologically anyway, chronologically anyway, fully formed grown adults. So, you know, I can't step into your adult life and start trying to dictate who you are, what you can do, where you can go, where you can't go. You got to be here with me. There's a bunch of duties that I expect you to fulfill. Can't do that, man. And I presented myself. I made a conscious decision that I wanted to present myself that way, because I hadn't had a relationship for a little while, not a really long while, but I hadn't had a relationship for a little while before I met my current wife. I had enough time to sort of think about like what I didn't want to do if, you know, if and when I got into another relationship, how I wanted to be, the kind of person I wanted to present myself as, you know, the kind of freedom I wanted to give my potential partner. And then when I met my wife, who obviously wasn't my wife, I really, really, really put all these things into play, at least, you know, verbally, at least in word form. which is important. You know, you gotta, you know, if you're not able to enunciate, elucidate, if you're not able to, you know, verbalize your thoughts, then how can you actualize them? So, you know, speaking things is important. A lot of people think, oh, words are just words, they don't matter. Nah, they do. They do, they do, they do. If you can't put things into words, you can't really properly conceptualize what it is you want to do, what it is you want to achieve, what it is you want to gain, who it is you want to be. If you can't put it into words, you don't know. It's really simple. I mean, that is, it's super profound. Think about it. If you can't put into words in your mind what you want to do, what you want to achieve, where you want to go, how you want to be, how you want to live, you know, so on and so forth. If you can't put it into words in your mind, you don't know what it is. Oh, well, I want to be a little bit more,
Mr. Moron? Can you say it? Dude, do you have the words in your mind?
If you, listen, this is super profound, okay? I hadn't planned on being profound. But this is super profound. If you cannot, at least in your mind first, put into words what it is you want to be, don't want to be, want to see, where we want to go, the job you want to have, blah, blah, blah. If you can't put it into words, then you don't know. And if you don't know, it can't happen. All that simple stuff. All that simple stuff. So, I say all that to say, when I first met my wife, I would tell her. I told her. Look, I don't know. Obviously, I didn't know at that point that we were going to get married. But I used to, you know, listen, I don't know what we're going to do, what we're not going to do, how things are going to, you know, progress with us. But what I do know is I'm not going to, like, try to hold you down to either do or not do whatever. Yo, my wife did mad stuff in our relationship that I can't say I didn't agree with, but my ideal partner, I wouldn't have wanted her to do some of that stuff. I'm not going to, nothing greasy. It has to do with her work. It has to do with her work. It has to do with the work that she was doing, the hours that she was working. Doesn't have anything to do with, like, any greasy sexual, like, you know, stuff like that. It was just her work, basically. The work that she was doing, the hours that she was working, the logistics of her gig. I didn't want her to be doing it, but I couldn't, you know, wait, come on, man. She's grown. Like, this is how this person is making money. And she was doing it before we met. Like, yeah, you know, you can't, I mean, come on, man. Somebody is the way they are before you meet them. However they were before you met them, whether, you know, explicitly or, you know, implicitly, has contributed to the person that you met, whom you like. You like the person. So the things that they were doing before you liked them contributed some way to who they were when you met them. Then when you meet them, how you sound telling them not to do the thing that they were doing before you met them when they were an adult? How you sound doing that? You can't do that, man. You can't do that. You can't do that. But that's what happens in long-term relationships and short-term ones, too. But over long-term relationships, I think it's partially biologically. What happens is the two people grow into each other, like intertwined plants. And at some point, they forget that they're independent, that they can breathe and live on their own. They either forget, seriously forget, as in, you've heard this a million times, what am I going to do without you? Yeah, well, what were you doing before the person? How am I going to live without you? How were you living before the person? How are you living before the person? That's how you're going to live. You're going to live exactly the same way you were living before the person. But people forget that, man. That's why I said in an earlier podcast, you know, and maybe this was me predicting my own misfortune, but 10 years, I think that is a pretty good, more than pretty good, I think that that's a really good time period for a couple to spend together, whether married or not. 10 years, yo. A decade. From 30 to 40. Do you know how different you are from 30 years old to 40 years old? Do you know how different you are from 20 to 30? From 40 to 50? It's a decade. You're so different. And so is your partner. The two of you are totally different people. The two of you are totally different people. Different desires, different hopes, different wishes, different, you know, in many cases, different diet, different schedule, different job, different body type, you know, different likes, different dislikes, you know what I mean? Different fashion, different hair. You're a decade. You're a different person. In the beginning of my relationship, I was very, very much of the conscious mindset that I wanted to be the kind of person that didn't try to control other people. Didn't tell my wife where to go, what to do, where she couldn't do, whatever. I used to tell her, I'm telling you, I used to tell her with my mouth, yo, do whatever you want to do. Do whatever you want to do. Go wherever you want to go. Be whoever you want to be. Do whatever you want to do. Be yourself. You were being yourself before you met me, right? I remember consciously thinking, yo, Trevor, the surefire way to F this little budding relationship up, the surefire way to mess it up, dude, is to try to tell this woman what to do, what not to do, where to be. Try to mold her into some whatever that you wanted her to be. I remember being consciously aware of that. So how are you going to tell a person, you know, I don't know, there's some weird mixture. How are you going to tell a person, yo, but you're not loving me the way I want you to love me? You're not, you know, and what does that translate to? It translates to, yo, you're not doing the stuff I want you to do. You're not being the person I want you to be. Who's this person you're being? You know what you're doing? You're being somebody else. You're not being the person that I've got idealized in my mind. You're not being the person I've got idealized in my mind. Who are you being? Excuse me? You're being who you want to be. Oh no, that won't do. That won't do. That won't do. We can't have that. We can't have that. Come over here. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. Sit down. We've got to have a talk about the fact that you're making decisions for your own benefit without including me. Life is unrequited love. All of life. Yo, if, ouch, my knee, man, this is pissing me off. If more people would just, I don't know, accept, understand, even consider for a trifling moment. If people would consider for a trifling moment that all of life is unrequited love, if we entered, you know, our physical existence on this reality, on this plane of existence, with some inherent knowledge that all of life is unrequited love, it'd be a better ride for all of us. I'm telling you, it'd be a better ride for all of us if you could somehow, from this moment forward, just understand. Me too.
Me two.
Me three.
Me four.
Me five.
Me six.
Me seven.
Me eight.
Me nine.
Me ten.
If all y'all could just understand, digest the basic premise that all of life is unrequited love. Nothing you love, no thing, no body that you love is going to love you back the exact way you want to. If at all,
yo,
if at all. I'm saying, dude. All of life is unrequited love. Even your children. In fact,
mostly your children.
Do children know how to love? Let's be honest. Let's be honest. Do children know how to love? Of course not. Of course not. If your partner loved you in the same way that a child loves you, would you be satisfied? Because children don't make a conscious effort to love. They just are. They just are. Children act
completely
selfishly. Completely. Everything they do, everything they say, every move they make, every behavior that they display, it's about satisfying their own urge for something, whatever it is. If your partner did that same thing, would you be happy with that? Of course not. This business of being in love and loving as an adult is an extremely conscious effort. It's an extremely conscious act. Like when people say, oh, I wish we could, you know, I wish it was just easy. You know, I wish it would just be easy. Are you crazy? You know, like fall in love with a desk if you want it to be easy. They don't do anything. Desks, they're there when you need them. Your desk is right there. It's always right there. It's right there. It's waiting for you. Your desk, it's not like cheating on you with other desks. It's just waiting for you. That's what's easy. But a relationship with another human being, like a loved one, a love relationship, you know, where the two of you are like loving each other and like, I don't know, you know, trying to make each other, you know, see, this is, the whole thing is just absurd. Trying to make each other feel good. Like what? What?
You mean to tell me you're counting on waiting, expecting, hoping, praying, wishing that this other human whom you met as an adult, you're wishing, hoping, praying, waiting for this other human to make you feel good? You mean to tell me you as a human being, you don't know how to make yourself feel good? That's what my friend meant today when she said to me, Trevor, your wife is giving you the opportunity to become whole. That's what she meant. What she meant was, yo, Duke, your wife is giving you the opportunity to love yourself, to show yourself love.
Yo, that is so heavy, man. Because like I said, everything is unrequited. Now, you know, I had a thought. Dogs. This is so mysterious. Dogs offer you do not have to, well, you should, but a dog will love you no matter what, unless you beat it, you know, starve it, kick it, I guess. But man, like, it's really weird, yo. I mean, seriously, it's really weird how much love dogs have for humans. It's bizarre. There's no other, like a dolphin, cats, get out of here. Monkeys, parrots, parakeets, turtles, rabbits. I don't know, horses, iguanas, ferrets, otters. None of these animals can hold a candle to how much a dog loves you. Why is that? Seriously, yo, think about it. There's some weird... I think it's weird. Because, like, there's almost like... Of course, there's many people who don't like dogs. Many. But for the people who do like dogs, you can't help it. You can't help it. It's like cellular. It's like built in. It's like part of your DNA to love a dog. And by the same token, it's part of the dog's DNA to love you back. And my God, dogs love, man. Am I right or wrong? Am I right or am I wrong? Dogs love hard, bro. How long do dogs live? 15, 20 years? 25 tops? I don't think they live 25. 15, 20 years? Yo. In those 15, 20 years that your dog is alive and it's with you, you are the sun, moon, and stars to your dog. And by the same token, your dog is the sun, moon, and stars to you. How did that connection, like, how come we're not as connected to, like, ducks? They both start with D. Ducks, dogs. Why don't humans form the same kind of crazy bond with ducks? Why? Why dogs? You know, I made a mistake. Dogs offer selfless love. It's true. It's true. Your dog is not sitting in the corner like, yo, if this MF-er don't give me a bone today, I'm not wagging a motherfucking tail. No tails being wagged for this nigga. Ain't had a snack in like a day. Wag a tail. Me? Dogs don't think this way. Your dog is going to wag his tail for you no matter what. Dogs cry. Dogs cry, yo. How bizarre. But everything else, all other relationships, unrequited, man. The love you have for your car's got no love for you. The love you have for your clothing has no love for you. The love you have for your job. Your job can't stand you. The love you have for your girl. I don't want to be cynical, man. I don't want to be cynical. I don't want to be cynical. But I don't know. I don't know. I don't know. I don't know, man. But I want to know. I want to know. I'd really like to know. Well, this has been another unrequited episode. Nothing specific. Your boy Trevor David Houchin. I'm gonna finish this dark chocolate, guys. Peace.